540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Search crews are racing against the clock to find a missing submersible in an area larger than the state of Connecticut. The five inside were heading to see the Titanic wreckage. CBS's Roxana Saberi reports.
There's no other trip like this.
For the past 2 years, the U.S.-based company OceanGate Expeditions has used the submersible to take tourists to the famous Titanic shipwreck, charging $250,000 per person. At nearly 2.5 miles below the ocean surface, the Titanic is located at roughly twice the depth of the Grand Canyon. Finding the Titan won't be easy at those depths, even if it's floating on the surface. Rescuers are now gaming out different scenarios in the event they find it.
Excessive heat warnings and advisories are posted across parts of New Mexico, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and Texas. Bruce Castillo lives in Austin.
I've been living in Austin for like 20 years now or something. It feels so much hotter than usual. Even in the shade, even with a fan, even with water, it feels kind of like a little icky.
The brutal heat is expected to continue into the weekend. Hunter Biden has reached a plea deal with the Justice Department, agreeing to admit to tax and a weapons violation. And if a judge approves the arrangement, the president's son would avoid jail time. The potential agreement comes as Republicans in the House continue an investigation into Hunter Biden. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy on the pending plea agreement.
My first reaction is it continues to show the two-tier system in America. If you are the president's leading political opponent, the DOJ tries to literally put you in jail and give you prison time. If you are the president's son, you get a sweetheart deal.
In Honduras, 41 women are dead after a riot at a prison 30 miles north of the country's capital. Most of the women burned to death. The country's president blames street gangs fighting inside the prison. More from BBC News reporter Blair Tatey.
Unfortunately, these are fairly common. We've seen in the last 2 months several brawls. It's worth saying that not all of these result in 41 deaths, including 25 that were burned, 16 shot dead. This one was quite violent, quite dangerous. We see a lot of these brawls within the prison between rival gangs like the Mara Salvatrucha, better known as the MS-13, and the Barrio 18, or the 18th Street Gang.
Good news for those who use the I-95 corridor in the Philadelphia area. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro announcing that in less than 2 weeks since a truck fire caused a portion of the road to collapse.
Based on the tremendous progress that we have made over the last 72 hours and the time it takes to complete the remaining steps, I can confidently state right here, right now, that traffic will be flowing here on I-95 this weekend.
Stocks closed down on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Need hires who dazzle without the hassle? You need Indeed. Their powerful platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Here's what you need to know in Southeast Wisconsin. With Waukesha, Racine, Kenosha, and other communities around the state, the shared revenue plan signed today by Governor Tony Evers is fairly simple. In the city and county of Milwaukee, there are strings attached, and a Milwaukee Teachers Union representative isn't happy that Evers was on board with the effort to send more money to non-public schools.
He's following suit exactly what Scott Walker's agenda was.
Union Representative Adrian Hicks talked to TMJ4 yesterday during the Juneteenth parade. The major tech company coming to Mount Pleasant has made plans for this week. Melissa Kay has more.
Microsoft wants to let Racine County residents know what's coming. The company is hosting what it calls an information session Thursday. The session aims to provide details about Microsoft's purchase of 315 acres of Mount Pleasant land and its $1 billion data center plans.
For Civic Media News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs. A $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today. 855-954-1186.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson & Wachs. GTW Law.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This summer, 540 AM WAUK has a new lineup.
Yes, that's awesome.
Starting at 6 AM, Up North News, 8 to 10, The Earl Ingram Show. Mondays, 8 to 9, Under the Helmet with the Grave Digger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crute. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show on 540 AM WAUK.
Tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the big story today, Hunter Biden pled guilty. And of course, the Trumpites are all, he got kid glove treatment. He got a special deal. You know, Josh Hawley and those idiots out there say, look at how the DOJ treats him. He pled guilty. He's being held accountable. And you know what the president didn't do? Didn't whine. You're no complaining. You're no whining. You're no, oh, poor woe is me. I'm the none of that. Oh, I can't wait for the day when Trump is found guilty. The collective whine. That will be a fun day. And here to share some thoughts on the potential of that and the latest defense. Hey, everything's mine. It was in my boxes. It's mine. Your two-year-old defense. I've asked Fred Wellman to come talk with us. Fred's a Democratic strategist and the host of On Democracy with F.P. Wellman, part of the Midas Touch Network. Fred, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to see you again, Rick. How are you, sir?
I am good. So what do you make of the Hunter Biden, the big story? You know, you pled guilty to a couple of misdemeanors.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I don't pretend to be one. I pretend to be a lot of things, but not a lawyer. Everything I've seen, all the research I've done, you know, I did my own research, of course, is that it was a reasonable deal. It was two misdemeanors. I mean, he got what anybody would have gotten. He made a mature decision to accept his guilt. He paid the money back. The taxes were, I saw a great analysis of on CNN where since he already paid the money back, he didn't file on time. And he was an admitted drug addict. He the court recognizes he was a drug addict at the time. If they had gone to court, try to get him to plead guilty, what they call the mens rea would not have worked because the court does recognize that addiction addles your thinking. He has made amends since then. As far as the gun charge the Republicans are trying to blow up, that was literally filling out an application. The gun was gone in 2 weeks. You know, he doesn't even have the gun. So the whole thing is much ado about, you know, doing the right thing. So, you know, congratulations to Mr. Biden, Hunter Biden, for doing the right thing. I have no problem with that. What I found hilarious was the terminology, the way I did a video for the My Such guys today talking about how, I don't know if you noticed, but once McCarthy came out, he said, oh, well, this is a sweetheart deal. And everyone came out the sweetheart deal, which just shows you how the Republican messaging machine sure. works, right? The Republicans put out their talking points, probably from the RNC, said, here is, you know, the talking point. It's a sweetheart deal. And everybody used it. I found 10 or 20 tweets from elected officials and their supporters. Stephen Miller, Kayleigh McEnany was mouthing those words on Fox News Forum. The machine of the Republican message machine worked. And what's concerning to you and me, I think, as activists and pseudo journalists, because we're, you know, we're pseudo journalists, is how the media had to pick that up. I mean, immediately a New York Times story come out saying, well, you know, was this a sweetheart deal? Using that term, Fox News, you know, CNN, MSNBC, all of them. Was it a sweetheart deal? And they got legal experts going on for 10, 20, you know, 5-10 minutes trying to explain how it wasn't. But this is where it works, right? You just keep saying that term, sweetheart deal, sweetheart deal, sweetheart deal. And it works. It works. And I wish my friends on the Democratic side would get better at that.
This is right where my mind was going, because Republicans play this game so well. You know, perfectly. The Tucker Carlson, I'm just asking questions here. You know, was Hitler a good guy if you got to know him? I'm just asking questions. You know, did the Holocaust really happen? Rick. I don't know, but I'm just asking questions. Yeah. And then the our media jumps right on board. Like you said, did it really happen? Was he really a nice guy? And they fall right in the line because, you know, the Republicans know how to pull the strings. You're spot on.
And this is my anger. When the indictments came out for Trump, look, we knew Jack Smith was going to indict him for the Mar-a-Lago documents. Everybody knew it. Yep. I had guests on my show saying, oh, he's getting indicted. Matter of fact, my guest, Dennis Africa, predicted the date almost to the day. He said, Fred, June. It's going to be June. I'm like, okay. So we knew it was coming. And yet the Democrats had no talking points, had no preparation. They should have had it all preloaded. Here's the talking points. And look, I don't know what those talking points are. That's not my job. But I would say something along the lines of the former president has been charged by a jury of his grand jury with 37 counts of violating the Espionage Act. These are crimes against the people of America. You know, I could do it in 5 minutes. And they didn't. They sat flat-footed. My understanding from insiders is the Dems even put out talking points not to say anything. They literally told their elected officials not only not what to say, but not to say anything at all. And look, I can get Joe Biden doing it. That's great. But I said something on Twitter. I was like, I don't mind the president keep his mouth shut. That's his job. I don't want him to talk. But we should armed. Guys like us should be armed with talking points. And get what happened? Immediately, Republicans were able to turn it around. Their talking point was as a political prosecution. And they've been pounding that. And it works.
Yeah. But here's the thing, Fred. I don't think you or me, we don't need talking points. I think we're usually on the issue from the beginning.
Right.
I think that our politicos need to figure this game out.
Well, that's it.
Because they're getting beaten at it so badly. I mean,
and it's coordination. Again, I said that word a couple times in our interview today. It's coordination. It is, look, a coordinated messaging campaign works. This is what I did for the Army. This is what I did as a civilian running a PR firm. You say the same message over and over and over and pound it. And the Dems just cannot do that. Like I said, I found at least 20 instances today within 2 hours of sweetheart deal, sweetheart deal.
No, I'm looking at my deal. Twitter feed. My Twitter feed is all about, it's all that.
Sweetheart
Elon
deal.
Musk made sure I saw sweetheart deal.
Oh, well, yeah.
All day today. I got to see every Republican make their pilgrimage to Trump Mountain to make the defense that this was a sweetheart deal and Donald's being persecuted. And the weird thing is Trump actually came out yesterday and admitted he did exactly what he's charged with. And
wasn't that great?
It is. But it's but it's not just great. It's we already knew this. And his base still isn't going to pay attention.
No. I thought Brett did a great job. He was asking. What was interesting to me is watching that unfold, that interview with Brett Baer, was Trump was he rang his bell a couple times. Trump is scared. You know, John Kelly, whom I have no regard for whatsoever. I actually hold in disregard. But John Kelly said about a week ago that Trump is scared S-less, right? Yep. He is scared, you know, word, you know. And I think I saw that. I think you saw that. I saw Tim Miller, who's on my show this week, as a matter of fact, did a live watching of the show, of the interview. And he said it. There's that pause where at one point Brett Baer said that a former president about his charges. You know, hey, are you worried about this? And Trump stumbled. You know, this is a guy who's been on camera since he could, get into Studio 54. This is a guy who lives on camera, and there was a pause there for a couple seconds where he kind of thought. And anybody who's been a watcher of Trump as long as some of us have as professionals, he is scared. He knows he's in trouble. He talks a good game, but these are real charges. They're open and shut. Smith has the witnesses. Smith has the tapes. He's got people going to go on trial. And so it was an interesting interview. I rather enjoyed the clips. Of course, I can't watch the guy because it makes me insane. But some of the clips were just nuts, right?
But here's the thing. This is where I get into this weird world, Fred, because you know, I had a bunch of people today go, well, you know, Hunter Biden did all this stuff. So this is how this math goes. And help me, because I went to a different school, you know, where 2 + 2 = 4. In this new world of new math, Hunter Biden, you know, pleading guilty to a couple of misdemeanors basically cancels out everything Trump and the Trump kids have done.
Clearly.
It's the Biden.
And look, here's the thing, Rick. I'm worried about Hunter Biden getting reelected. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. He will impeach him. Wait a minute. Nope. No, he's not in government. Maybe they'll kick him out of his government job. Wait, he doesn't have a government job. He's a private citizen, for God's sake. You know, my friend Kevin Cruz put out a Substack, I think it was today, talking about Billy. Remember Billy Carter? You're old enough to remember Billy
Beer.
Carter.
I still remember Billy
the great
Beer.
Great scandal. Billy Beer. You know, how the big embarrassment of the Carter administration was Billy. Billy was a civilian, just like Hunter Biden.
Roger Clinton. I mean, Roger had problems. You had a couple of Reagans who had problems.
Yep. Hell, George Bush is having, George Bush himself. But here we are, and so the attempts to compare the two, that's why they're so desperate for this crazy Burisma stuff and the big guy getting $5 million and how witnesses keep suddenly disappearing or dying. It's so crazy how they all die. It's all just a smokescreen to try. Again, it is the Steve Bannon technique, right? Throw enough S at it, right? If we throw enough poop at it, it'll stick, right?
And that's where
this is just a barrage of poop.
It's a storm, yes. And thank storm you for that. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Fred Wellman. Fred is a Democratic strategist and host of On Democracy with FP Wellman on the Midas Touch Network. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Now, here's the thing. This is the weird thing, because over the weekend, I'm sure you saw the Joe Rogan, Peter Hotez, RFK, Kook, dust up. And this is kind of the same. It's the platforming of insanity. It's, you know, it's saying, you know, this equals this. Like, you know, Hunter Biden, you know, pleading guilty to a couple of misdemeanors, you know, forgives all of the crimes of Trump and all of them. It's the same kind of thing. And, you know, I said yesterday that it shows that there, you know, there are crazy people on the Democratic side too. And I'm not sure where you put RFK Jr., but he's still on the Democratic side somewhat, even though he is going to, going to the Maniac Moms for Liberty event.
I mean, that says a lot right there, right? The Moms for Fascism. No, I agree. I think the insane, what you saw unfold this weekend, in many ways, I think is the death and all of Twitter in a lot of ways. I mean, if I was an advertiser, first of all, I would never put, I used to be a PR guy. I did social media for a number of my clients. Not one of my clients would be advertising on Twitter. The danger of having an advertisement appear next to a neo-Nazi tweet or a racist tweet or something about anti-vaccines, it's just too great. Elon's not making any attempt to stop that. So that's another part of it. But you're right. The insanity of the mind space that – I mean, we had – Rick, we had a Missouri congressman tweet this morning, I think it was. You can't make this up. A picture of Dr. Hotez next to a picture of Joe Rogan shirtless and said, here's Hotez and here's Rogan. Who would you take your health advice from? I don't know. The doctor, the world-renowned immunologist, or the dude who works out a lot. And, you know, I mean, it's just I should definitely take it from the guy who does steroids and weed. It's just – this is a sitting congressman from Missouri who, by the way, fun fact, ran unopposed. I mean, it's just a train wreck, man. And so we're in a post – and we've heard that term before, the post-fact world, but we are definitely in a post-fact world. I think we're in a post-reality world.
Yeah. This is what I talked about yesterday. You know, I had someone email and say, you know, just because they've got a bunch of initials behind their name doesn't mean they know anything. Yes, it does.
It literally does.
A PhD, they know more than I do.
It's actually what it means. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Alec went to school and stuff. And then there's a crazy thing. They actually had to stay doing that work for years and years. But hey, you know, Google. You always Googled.
Yeah, I mean, and because do you agree that Hotez should not have debated RFK Jr.? Because I think there's no way you platform a kook like RFK Jr.
No. There were some really smarter people than me on Twitter who really pointed out how there's just no winning. You won't win this debate, right? It's not that kind of, it's not a debate, first of all. It's going to be Joe Rogan, well prepared with talking points. It's going to be RFK, who's got his exact talking points. You're going to have a doctor who is going to say, well, there's study after study. Well, I had this study from Japan in 2014 that says this. How are you going to fact check that in real time? The doctors are going to have thousands memorized. It's not a realistic thing. There's all you can do. There's no positive net gain from going anywhere near this discussion.
And the second the doctor's honest about something and says, look, you know, maybe there is going to be some negative. That's all you're going
to
hear.
That's what doctors have to say. Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, hey, not every surgery works. Right. Some people die. You know, it's a travesty. And the fact that the owner of that platform is so deeply involved in spreading that travesty just says how broken the whole system is. The fact that any investor are continuing to leave their money. And that's where we go to the whole art. Well, listen to me, God, I sound like an anti-capitalist now, but the capitalist system, the VC system, the investor world where people, banks, reputable banks gave billions of dollars to this total nut job who has proven himself to be a complete freaking nut job. And every day shows he's a effing nut job, and they haven't pulled their funds. They haven't pulled back. Like, well, you know, Tesla, it's just, it shows the complete failure of that system. I get very aggravated. I used to be a businessman, you know, and I had, you know, I was really into entrepreneurship, and the people they throw on the cover of Entrepreneur Magazine like that, you know, these guys are a travesty, you know, and Elon is living proof of that. And with this weekend's events with Dr. Hotez, who's respected and by all means a decent man. And here's the punchline of this whole thing. The final point I'll make on that is none of those guys, look, Joe Rogan is not going to have a nut job show up at his house. Elon Musk, I think he sleeps on couches. He's not going to have a nut job, but he's surrounded by security. This is a guy who walks around Twitter headquarters with a four-man security detail. He does not have to worry about somebody showing up at his house saying, dude, why won't you argue with him? When a guy actually showed up at Peter Hotez's house in Houston and accosted him about not debating on Joe Rogan's crappy podcast. So that's what makes me mad as a person who's been subjected to the world. As you know, I was the Lincoln Project executive director. We had some stuff happen. I don't know if you heard. And at one point we had security. They wanted to put security in my house because I was getting so many death threats. People posted pictures of my house online. I lived on a very busy street in downtown Richmond, Virginia. You could stand on the sidewalk and put bullets through my window as I sat on my couch. None of those guys stirring up these nut jobs will ever face that threat. And that's what really makes me viscerally angry as a man who has faced that threat, as a man who had to disassociate himself from his ex-wife's business and his daughter's business because so many people were sending them threats because I was remotely associated with them.
No, I mean,
none of those people causing these problems will ever face that.
And that's the reason they do this stuff. It's that, what, exactly. This is where I want to finish this up.
It's
this
a joke. It's a game.
Right.
A game.
This is where I want to finish this up because they know that they can engage and they can activate the dim who are going to go out there and do the harassment. They're going to walk into a Target and harass employees because there's some merchandise on the shelf that they don't agree with. They're going to go into places and they're going to intimidate people and they're going to threaten them to get them to do what they want. And they look, the right understands this works.
Yep, it does. Hey, look, 1923, okay? It works then too, right? You know, Hitler says things and brown shirts appear in the streets and beat up communists, right? Again, it's the same playbook. It's a 100-year-old playbook or more of the fascist playbook, which is, you know, create chaos. And then, of course, you know what's going to happen is only Trump can bring us peace, right? Only they can stop this chaos. That's the punchline. They cause the violence. They incite the violence. They encourage the violence. And then when the violence occurs, they bemoan the violence to show that they should be in charge because they can stop the violence. It is a playbook as old as guys wrapped in brown shirts marching to Rome.
Or in blue shirts with khaki pants on.
As they are today. Yep. Same
scary
people.
Stuff. But Fred, I appreciate the time. I hope you'll come back and always share more with us down the road.
Thank you. I hope you will catch the show every Friday night in the Midas Touch Network. We're doing great. Love to join us.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, Fred Wellman. Make sure you check out his podcast on Democracy with FP Wellman on the Midas Touch Network. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I'm going to show you just how far that the right will go. Now, understand, there is an all-out assault on anyone transgender, or really in this day, anyone different. And look, I'm not the mayor of Wokistan. I'm not out there, you know, marching in the streets. But I do understand when people are being attacked, and I understand when people's rights are being violated. And I look at the transgender community, and there's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of attacks legislatively. And you look at Tennessee and all the stuff that they've done. There was a story today over, it was the National Tennessean that pointed out that Vanderbilt University has turned over medical records of patients who were seeking gender-affirming care. You know, you take your kids there, assuming you've got some privacy, and now because the state's attorney general is investigating the hospital because they believe there might be fraud, there might be some fraud there, so we want those personal records of all of those people that you treated. And I look at this as just a backdoor way of getting at who is doing this stuff. Now, look, as I've said before, I don't understand it. I don't get it, but I don't have to. This is not a place for government. This is for families. This is for families and their doctors to decide. That's where this should be. Something conservatives used to believe. But you've got these attorneys generals. You've got these state legislatures who are trying to, well, we're going to intimidate these people. So, of course, Vanderbilt comes out and says, hey, we had to turn this over. So all of these families are freaking out, going, you know, are we exposed? Is Tennessee going to be the next Texas where they're going to start attacking these families? Now, of course, the attorney general's office is like, well, you know, it's unprecedented that the hospital would do this. You know, why would they do this? They're doing it because everyone knows why you're doing this investigation. It's to intimidate people. It's to get to them. And I'll tell you, this kind of abuse of our laws, I don't care which side of the trans issue you're on. As I said, I don't understand it. I'm probably never going to understand it. But I believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I believe in people being able to follow their course. I believe in government staying out of my life. This is kind of a big liberty deal. So for all those people wearing the I believe in liberty shirts or freedom on their trucks, this is that issue. And even if you don't, like me, understand why or how or what someone's going through, or you should not want a government to have this kind of power. You should not want to have a government with this kind of ability to influence someone's life. Now, fortunately, our laws, somewhat, I look at the case in Arkansas, where a judge in Arkansas struck down the state's law forbidding medical treatment for teenagers and for minors in the transition phase. Now, again, I don't know what all that means. And I'm not saying that I do. But the legal system is saying maybe this is too far. Understand, a good portion of our legal system set up by who? The former guy. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that sanity rules. Now, do we need more research? Sure, we need more, a lot of things. But what we don't need are ideologues, especially religious zealot ideologues in places like Arkansas and Tennessee, being able to intimidate and harass families. Because that's what this is about. This is about harassing people. This is about intimidation. This is about power. As much as it's about the messaging, as much as it is about tearing us apart, and because look, there are a lot of things that have to be dealt with. There are a lot of things that, you know, we haven't been able to have a discussion around on this issue because we're stuck at the baseline, whether people should be able to exist or not. We can't get to the next level. Like, for instance, the Supreme Court evidently today
declined to hear a case of a Christian college in Missouri who doesn't know where to put a transgender student. They've got male and female dorms. Where do you put them? The Supreme Court said, well, we're going to throw up our hands. This is one of these moments where, as a society, we got to figure this stuff out. And we can. This is the thing. We're big boys and girls. We're big boys and girls. We can solve problems, especially complex, difficult ones like this. Just my thought. I want to hear yours, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1943. That was the day that would go down in the history books as the 1943 Detroit Race Riot. The violence started on Belle Isle, a large island park in the Detroit River. Both white and black Detroiters were visiting the park on that hot, sunny summer Sunday afternoon. The fighting broke out among a number of the white and black youth. Such interracial fighting over the use of parks and recreation space happened frequently throughout the urban North during the 1940s. Soon, false rumors spread about white and black attacks on women and children. Fueled by these rumors, anger grew among members of both communities. The fighting spread across the bridge into the city. The next day, federal troops were called in to restore the peace. Over 3 days of fighting, 34 people were killed. 25 were black, including 17 killed by police and federal troops. 9 were white. The next month, the NAACP produced a report called What Caused the Detroit Riot? An Analysis. They found that one of the biggest reasons for the sharp racial animosity was the influx of new black workers into the Detroit labor force. During World War II, Detroit's mighty car industry converted its factories to wartime production. As factory workers went off to fight, demand for labor soared. Southern labor, both black and white, were recruited to come north. Many white Detroiters did not want to work with the new African-American hires. From March to May of that year, there were 5 separate work stoppages by white laborers over black hiring or promotion. At the Packard Motor Company, nearly 27,000 workers walked off the job over the upgrade of black workers. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Years ago, a Texas lawmaker got caught using his official position to enrich himself by taking money from special interests in exchange for voting their way. The culprit did not deem this as corrupt, but just the normal ethic of an enterprising business transaction. I seen my chances, he explained, and I took 'em. This is the Clarence Thomas Code of Ethics. As has been widely reported, this Supreme Court judge, who reliably rules for corporate supremacy over the people's interests, has secretly been on the take for years from a billionaire corporate right-winger. Real estate tycoon Harlan Crow, an extremist activist for plutocratic government, has been lavishing millions of dollars worth of luxury vacations, private jet travel, family housing and educational payments, and other gratuities on Thomas. Yet, this supposedly supreme lawyer says he detected no whiff of bribery, nor did he see any need to inform us commoners of it. He simply seen his chances and took 'em. But Thomas knew damn well that it was improper, corrupting, and disgusting. After all, during the last 3 decades, he has consistently voted for court rulings to make such obvious graft legal. For example, he's voted again and again to drain common sense from our anti-corruption laws, declaring that it is legal for a corporation to keep a public official on private retainer, that it's okay for political officials to sell access to their offices, that the appearance of corruption is not corrupt, and directly relevant to Harlan Crow, Thomas voted that it is technically not bribery to try influencing public officials by bestowing a series of gifts to them over time. This is Jim Hightower saying, if it seems to you like the system is rigged to favor the powerful, there you have it. Clarence Thomas is both the rigger and the beneficiary of the system.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, a quick shout out to my brothers and sisters in the Teamsters Union, who right now are voting to ratify a contract in the freight industry. As I understand, first year, $350 raise, not bad. I'd like to see what's in the rest of it. I had a couple of folks reach out and ask what I thought. I gotta know what's in it. But this, again, this is what the members will decide, and I'm looking forward to see what the ratification vote comes out to look like. But here's the thing. You know, we see labor at the front right now. Workers finally saying, coming out of the pandemic, saying, hey, we deserve better. We want better wages, hours, conditions, a voice, say, some dignity. And we're seeing organizing happening around the country. And look, we focused a lot on the Amazons and the Starbucks and those. But there's a lot of organizing going on that, well, we don't see an awful lot of. And here to share some thoughts on one of those campaigns going on at Medieval Times out in California, I've asked Mel Buer to come talk with us. Mel is an associate editor over at the Real News Network. They're one of the folks who do some outstanding labor reporting. Mel, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on.
So we see these big stories all over the place. The Amazons, we see the Apples, we see the organizing going on. But these littler, these smaller campaigns, they don't quite get as much attention. Why is this situation at Medieval Times something we should be looking at?
Well, it's interesting to see what's going on at the Medieval Times location in Buena Park, California. Right now, their performers have been on a ULP strike for the last over 4 months now. They organized last November, following a sort of a short wave of organizing that had happened at other locations across the country, one in New Jersey and I think another in Schaumburg, Illinois, if I'm not mistaken. And these are performers who are organizing with the Guild of Variety Artists, and you know, they're smaller shops. You don't see very many. This isn't a warehouse full of, you know, 1,000 employees. This is a smaller shop of about 40 employees who are organizing with this particular union, who have sort of seen what has been going on with the more independent organizing and are trying to sort of stake their own claim for better working conditions,
right?
You know, and are feeling the confidence and have felt the confidence to be able to do that.
Now, what's exciting about hearing these stories is, you know, it harkens me back to some of the stories I heard about in the 40s and 50s, when you had smaller shops popping up, and you weren't part of one of the bigger unions, but people felt empowered in their workplaces locally to be able to band together. So for me, this is kind of harkening back to the old days.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's really cool to see what's been going on in the last couple of months at this location. You know, these 40 employees with this union have been on strike since February. After the strike broke, you know, after that news broke in February, sound and lighting technicians who were part of a different department at this location of Medieval Times organized with IATSE and had a successful, I think, unanimous election in the last month. And just recently, the retail clerks who also work at the same location, about 20 of them, filed with the UFCW. So, you know, you're seeing these departments of these various groups kind of working with each other and feeling that sort of solidarity and feeling empowered to be able to organize their own departments within the same shop, you know. And that's, I think, a really wonderful thing to see in these smaller sort of, groups, you know.
Now, the bigger thing here is, and look, we could talk about, you know, probably 1,000 situations just like what's going on at Medieval Times, where workers exercise their rights. They demand to have a voice, and the company says, no, we don't care. You're not getting a contract. We're not even going to sit down and really talk. We'll play, but we're not really going to talk, and there'll be no first contract. This, to me, again, is one of those moments where you look at how weak our labor laws are and how pathetically weak our labor laws are and why we needed, you know, reform decades ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you're seeing the same thing at this location. You know, the corporation is not, as far as the workers are concerned, engaging in any sort of earnest activity at the bargaining table to be able to end this labor action. Right. They don't quite give a hoot. And unfortunately, that means that these workers stay out on the line longer. Some of them have already picked up part-time jobs to be able to make things, you know, work in the meantime, and they spend They were spending 6 days a week out on the line. They're now spending 5 days, full days out there, you know, day in and day out, just trying to get a measure of respect from this corporation.
Yeah.
That takes in a lot of money, you know, has the ability and, you know, finances to fly performers in to replace the striking workers, for example. And put
so
them
I was
going to
ask, that was going to be my next question. So we're bringing scabs across the line for, so this can continue.
Yes. Yes. You know, up until I think the first month or so, they had flown folks in from or attempted to fly folks in from their locations in Canada, which violated labor law, and they weren't able to do that, you know. And we're talking about performers who are engaging in dangerous stunts, you know, multiple shows a night, getting paid less than $20 an hour to do these types of things. You know, they're skilled workers and skilled performers. And they're concerned about these replacement workers working too much or not having enough training, and, you know, exposing them to injury and exposing these crowds to potential liability. You know, these are all the problems that we see whenever we bring scabs in anywhere, right? You know, it's definitely caused some strife among these workers. And, you know, they don't want to be out on the line. They want to be performing for folks, and they want to, you know, they want to get back to work. And they're just waiting the company out and trying to get them back to the bargaining table.
Yeah, but you know, it shouldn't have to be this difficult. And look, my mind immediately goes, what's wrong with the people sitting in the stands that you're going to go and see scab performers? But that's just my old school upbringing of you don't cross someone's picket line and you certainly don't reward people for doing that. But again, I have to bring this back to the, you know, the reality of our situation and how bad our labor laws are, that we're in this situation. This should not be, this kind of situation shouldn't have to happen.
Right. I agree. You know, I think that especially with these folks, you know, at one point there was a culture that you don't cross a picket line. You know, and I've been out to the picket line multiple times, and, you know, it's about, you know, I would say it's a mix of individuals who show up for these performances. Some of them get their refunds and they stand out on the line for 20 minutes and they talk with workers. Some folks just keep on walking, you know, and they say, well, we want to take our kid in for, you know, their birthday, or we had these tickets for months, or whatever excuse they want to give. You know, they're willing to walk past these folks, or, you know, they tell these folks, these are, you know, a lot of these performers are in their 20s. And so they, you know, they say, this isn't a real job. Get a different job if you don't like this one, you know, the typical sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating for them. You know, they're doing their best because they love what they do, and they're doing their best to, you know, secure better working conditions for themselves and for the people who take these jobs if they decide to leave it, you know. And that's a really important thing to really hone in on here.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Mel Bauer. Mel is an associate editor over at The Real News Network, therealnews.com, the website, if you want to check out the work that they do. But here's the thing. I love that frame. This isn't a real job. And when I was doing organizing, I used to hear this stuff all the time. You know, I'm only going to be here 6 months, so I don't really care what, you know, I don't really care. And you go, but, you know, someone else is going to take this job. And look, in 6 months, I'm going to come back and you're still going to be here. And you could have made it this much better. This is, it's classic deflection. It's classic, you know, there's always someone somewhere better down the road. I've always said, if that's the case, why not make this better and then continue on down the road?
Well, and you have to really think about it here. These are performers performing on horses, right? They're performing these incredible stunts, right? This live action fighting, you know, they're throwing each other around. You know, these are you know, not safe things to do, right? They do it with a measure of safety because they've been trained to do so. It is skilled work.
Right.
It is work that I can't do, nor could I pretend to do, you know? It's work that most folks who go to the show can't do. Right. So, you know, in that sort of vein, it's like, this is a real job. This is a, you know, these are folks who are performing for an audience that pays money to be there, and they're getting paid less than $20 an hour to do it. You know, it just doesn't work in the greater Los Angeles area, where that is not a livable wage. You know, doesn't work for the level of skill that they have to amass in order to do the job safely and to perform in an entertaining way. Right. And it certainly doesn't do any good for any person who's either standing across from these strikers or walking past that picket line to tell them that the work that they're doing doesn't mean anything. Because if it didn't mean anything, then they wouldn't cross that line, right? They wouldn't still go to the show. So who's right here? Yeah. Clearly not these folks who say this job is, quote unquote, not real. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And then look, I've said all along in the 18 years I've been doing this show, every job is one worthy of dignity and respect. Every job is worthy of being able to support yourself on. Doesn't matter what you do, from street sweeper to doctor, everywhere in between, you should be able to lead a reasonable existence and have some dignity and respect in that job. And what we measure dignity and respect in is, are you able to put food on the table, keep a roof over your head? Are you able to take care of yourself and your family? And I think every job, no matter how you diminish it, should have at least that bare minimum. At least that's my thought.
Right. I agree 100%.
So the question then becomes, how do we take this moment? How do we take this what's going on and use this to get people around to the same ideas, around to, we do need major comprehensive labor law reform. We do need a political movement of working class folks taking off the red hats and the blue hats and getting that hard hat on and rebuilding the working class of this country. How do we move in this? How do we use this for that?
Well, I mean, this is something that I've kind of learned in my certainly briefer time. I'm younger, but briefer time standing on picket lines or reporting from picket lines is that oftentimes the best political education that you can have is to walk out there and talk to the workers, right? Especially in your own area. I covered the Kellogg strike back in 2021, and that was down the road from a house that I grew up in. You know, I drove past that plant every day on my way to school. And so it became having conversations with your neighbors at that point, right? And being able to kind of reach across that political divide, whatever you think is that divide, it doesn't really exist because you're talking to folks who live down the street from you, yeah. Right? Who work in the same area, who understand, in one way or another, the life that you live, right? And that I think has been, something that can really kind of increase the education, the labor education, the political education, the radicalizing moment, whatever you want to call it, right? Simply by just going out to the line and hearing these folks' concerns and seeing what they're trying to accomplish and seeing how that can and is applied to any industry or position of labor in this country is a really great place to start, right? Because you do end up finding that despite your political differences, there's still these little through lines, right, that folks understand, right? Bosses and managers are usually screwing you over. You're not getting paid enough for the work that you do. You can't afford a minor emergency, even though, you're paying 20% of your paycheck into health insurance or a retirement that may or may not come to pass when you get older. These are all like sort of universal problems that most folks have something to talk about when you really get into the meat of the conversation. And those are the moments where you can kind of really build that understanding,
yeah.
Right? And get past this sort of, well, if you are getting paid this much, then these quote unquote essential workers should get paid more. You know, the sort of divides that managers, bosses,
oh, yeah,
corporations and the wider government really likes to just drive those wedges in. And all it takes is just having a face to face calmly with the folks that you see when you come across a picket line or any sort of political action. It's very simple.
You just need
to have the patience to do that. You know?
It's that old school getting back out in the streets and talking to people, looking them in the eye face to face, like we did back in October and November last year when we did our Working Class Heroes radio tour and got into those places and had these conversations, which is why I think it's so important that you guys are doing what you're doing at the Real News Network. And I hope folks will take a look at it. TheRealNews.com is the website. You guys are independent. You guys are out there telling stories that are right in this line that working people, I think, need and should be consuming.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, the Real News Network has been around since about 2007, 2008. And what we really are trying to do is create this space where folks who normally don't have a voice in these larger conversations can step up to the podium and talk about what's important to them, particularly in labor struggles.
Yeah. And it's not about the horse race and the divide. It's more about the things that, and this is what I've found in looking at your site. It's more about the things that we need to know, like these strikes, like these actions that are going on, information that we need, not the stuff that's going to tear us apart, maybe the stuff that's just going to bring us together.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, we believe that individuals from the community who do this work day in and day out are the experts on these topics, right? So these are the folks that we want to platform. You know, we really care about the work that we do and the fact that we are independent and that we take, you know, we don't take ads. And, you know, that means that I get to really spend my time talking to amazing people. And hearing about their lives. And, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful place to be.
No, I love the work that you guys do. And I hope you'll come back and talk to us again. Keep us up to date on what you're doing, what stories you're covering, and how we reclaim and reunionize the working class of this country. Mel Buer, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you so much.
Good stuff, Mel Buer. She is an associate editor there at the Real News Network, therealnews.com, the website. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1893. That was the day that Eugene V. Debs founded the American Railway Union. The goal of the union was to organize railroad workers from different job classifications. Previous railroad unions had been based on job type. Coordinating solidarity between the multiple unions proved difficult. The lack of solidarity hurt railroad organizing. The American Railway Union was open to all white union railway workers up to the job of foreman. This new approach to organizing paid off quickly. In the spring of 1894, the union won a strike against the Great Northern Railroad. The Great Northern Railroad had arbitrarily reduced the workers' wages. When the railroad agreed to go to arbitration to settle the strike, it was seen as a great union victory. Railroad owners were notorious for their anti-union stances. The American Railway Union had not only stood up to the railroad, they had won. In less than a year, more than 450 locals had joined the American Railway Union. Nearly 150,000 workers became members. This made Debs' organization one of the largest unions in the country. But as quickly as it rose, it also rapidly declined. The mid-1890s marked one of the greatest economic downturns in U.S. history prior to the Great Depression. In 1884, the union organized a boycott against George Pullman. Pullman was the founder of the Pullman Palace Car Company. He had slashed his workers' wages while not reducing rents in his company town. A federal judge issued an injunction barring Debs and other leaders from coordinating the boycott. President Grover Cleveland ordered federal troops to get the trains running again. During the 6 months Debs was in prison for supporting his members, the American Railway Union was crushed. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So Bernie Sanders, I got to tell you, love Bernie Sanders. In fact, I say this all the time. First guy I ever interviewed back in 2005 when we jumped into this radio gig. He was one of the first people that I wanted to talk to and was the first person that I interviewed on my own. And I'm glad. This is a guy who has been a champion for working people. And now as head of a very powerful committee to make sure that working people have a voice, he is doing the work that needs to be done. In fact, as head of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, he has now alerted Amazon that there's an investigation. They're going to be looking into what Sanders says is Amazon's abysmal safety record and basically going to scrutinize the labor practices of the company, pointing out that, you know, they're the most profitable, the biggest, most valuable company in the country. They should be the safest, not the most dangerous. And as he points out, the company conditions in the warehouse, he says, are dangerous and illegal. He says the warehouses are uniquely dangerous due to the physically demanding nature of the work. and the production levels. This is one of those things that, you know, you're constantly wearing things barking at you. You got to pick up a package every couple of seconds. It's constant surveillance, constant, well, cracking the whip. And technology has done this. And it's not just going to be Amazon workers now. And this is the reason everyone should care. It's them now. Eventually, it's going to be everyone. And this is where we're saying, you know, what kind of environment should people work in? Now, I've said from the beginning, Amazon should be unionized. Workers should be forming unions right now to fight back against all this instead of just taking it. And I know, we're just happy to have a job because they put them in places where, you know, reasonable jobs are hard to find. And, you know, we've talked to workers over the last several years who've said, look, you know, the factory came in, the warehouse came in, this industry came in. We were grateful for the work. And then they just chewed up every working person and spit them out the other side. And this is basically what's being accused by Senator Sanders and why this investigation. Now, the interesting thing about this that I did not know is, and I shouldn't be surprised by it, and I'm not surprised by it, but evidently Amazon has its own kind of in-house clinic, in-house healthcare kind of thing. And you go, well, it sounds like a good company wanting to take care of their employees. And that's how they frame it. But it's also on how they keep injuries down. It's also how they underreport, according to Senator Sanders, and something that they are going to look into, the undertreating and underreporting of employee industry injuries because of this. You got to go to the company doctor. It's almost like we're recreating the company town again, isn't it? Because if you can't call off sick, got to come into the company doctor. So I'm glad to see Senator Sanders is taking a look at this, as we should. At the end of the day, I'm still somebody who believes, in the workplace, every worker should have that voice, that security. And if you can't, this is where laws have to step in. And to show you just how pathetically weak they are, you know, Amazon has had a higher than average injury rate across warehouse sectors for a while now. In fact, I think it's the Strategic Organizing Committee. They've done some extensive reporting on this. And it's in large part because it's cracking the whip. We got productivity gains to make. We got to make up that we're on a mission. And that mission is not supporting your family and that. The mission is customer-driven. That's their thing. And while I understand to a degree, it's still about being able to go home at the end of the night. So we're in this moment where, you know, I look at today's, you know, stories that I talked about earlier. The fact that Pennsylvania passed a minimum wage law in the House that isn't going to pass the Senate. And you've got people who are like, no, you know, $7.25 is just fine. You got people saying, no, we can't infringe on the warehouse space. When do we start demanding better? Now, look, we spent a lot of time today talking about Trump and the insanity that comes out of that. We spent a lot of time talking about the, you know, the Hunter Bidens and all of the divisive stuff, all of the stuff that's, you know, supposed to be out there to keep us on edge and get people engaged and calling into talk shows and that. But seriously, when you look at the economy as a whole, when you look at the fact that people are working longer and harder and struggling to make ends meet, and you do have this sense of tension, this real world anger, how do we turn that around? And as I've been saying for the longest time, I think it starts in the workplace. It starts with empowering people to demand better. I'm going to be interested to see what Senator Sanders in this investigation comes out as. I'm going to be interested to see where they pursue this, because ultimately, they are the leader in the race to the bottom. They are the ones who are going to set the tone for all of the other warehouse jobs, all of the other similar kind of employment. And if they aren't the model of positivity, if they aren't the model of, see, it used to be union jobs used to be that gold standard. This is how we do things. And everybody worked to get to that. We flipped this whole model up on its end, and now it's who's the worst actor and how can we emulate the worst of their behavior. So good on Senator Sanders. I hope the committee will look into this, and I am looking forward to seeing how this plays out. And if you missed any of today's program, grab the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. You'll find ours. If you got questions, comments, something on your mind,
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.